So last week we only covered right view as far as we got. So today we're only going to get as far as right thought. We're not going to get any further than that. And that's because the Eightfold Path is it's enormous. It's literally enormous. Look at this list. Right thought means the following. Not to cherish or hold desires. Now, not to cherish, that this implying opinions and beliefs and all of that. Holding desires, you know, your that's, you know, as subtle as your dreams and things like this. Not to be greedy, not to be angry, and not doing any harmful deed. So it's enormous list, because we're talking about a gigantic field of study here. I mean, each one of these have almost entire sutras dedicated to each one of these topics in just that list of right thought. So again, this we originally started with 3 points of practice. Those 3 points are so gigantic, there are numerous sutras that cover each one of those 3 points. And within those sutras, it breaks down and has sutras supporting those individual topics that make up one of those points. So the same thing actually happens in this Eightfold Path. This first one we talk a lot about, especially here in the Blue Lotus. This is one of our big topics, is the resolution to not cherish or hold our opinions and desires. And again, today we're going to dive into that topic and maybe look at it from yet another filter. Notice that it means the resolution. The practice of Dharma is most concerned about the intention. We are never able to thoroughly engage a Dharma, a practice, undertake a study, or take on the vows, without having first set the intention. But we could try it. I mean, a lot of us do. We just blindly dive right. Oh, yeah, I'll take that class. I'll study that sutra. I'll go follow this guru. I'll do this thing or that thing. And we don't. Our intention is, hey, we're going to do it because it's offered. That's not a very good intention. It's not very clear. Why do we want a good intention? Why do we want clear intention? Because we are trying to replace karma. We have a whole bunch of habitual tendencies already. And most of those have got us into some kind of trouble one way or another. Emotionally, physically, whatever it might be. Economically, we've got problems because of our habits. Our habitual nature, the karmic ones most specifically. Buddha says the best way to do that is to replace them with something else. Well, he doesn't necessarily mean the activity. So he's not really saying replace the habitual action. That's very, very difficult to do. And in fact, I don't think it's really possible. I don't think that works at all. You know, they talk about, oh, you do something 21 times, you get a new habit. But that really doesn't get to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is the klesha. The root of the problem is the afflictive emotion that spurs. And we call it afflictive emotion because it's afflicting. It's perfuming. It's tainting our motivation and our impulses to act a certain way. That's why it's afflictive. It's not afflictive like, oh my God, it's such a horrible emotion. No, that's not what it means. It means that it's an emotion that's going to rise. Maybe we like it. This is what they say about people with anger issues. People with anger issues like to be angry. It feels good. It does. Right? An angry person, I'm speaking from direct immediate experience, it feels great. You should do it all the time. Like, just what anything. Literally. Like, if you're putting on your sock and it doesn't go on right, you know how the heel, like, comes up on the side? Get mad. You freaking sock! You know, and just let yourself lose it. It'll feel great. You're going to love it. But the effect is horrible. You'll probably rip your sock, break your toe, or, you know, some fall off the bed, bang your head into the dresser. Something will happen that's really not good. Fall off the tree. Yeah, fall out of the tree and your maul is stuck in it. I mean, there's all kinds of weird things that happen to you when you have anger fits. I don't recommend this. It will feel really good, but let yourself explode in a rage against your companion or partner. It's a really bad idea. In the moment, it'll feel great. And then next thing you know, they're packing their bags and leaving you. So the result is horrible. So don't misunderstand afflictive emotion. Afflictive emotion doesn't mean an emotion that you get that you hate. It means it's a specific emotion that always perfumes or motivates you to do something. And the problem is, you're programmed. Like Pavlov's dog. That when that emotion pops up, you just blindly do it. It's like, oh, okay, they blew the whistle, so we're going to do this. And so this is what happens with it. So what we're trying to replace is that emotion. The triggering of that emotion is what we're trying to replace. How do we do that? Well, there's no method other than intention. We have to constantly be creating new intentions. Over and over and over and over. How do you create an intention? What's the method?
Verbalize it.
Yeah, you verbalize. Which means you have to think it through. You have to have a clear thought. Right? You know, when you're having to do writing, you know what it is that you want to say, but you have to formulate in your mind a very clear thought that can be communicated. Otherwise, you can't write. Well, I mean, you could, but it's going to sound like complete gibberish, and nobody's going to understand anything that you're saying. So in order to communicate very clearly, you have to have a very clear thought, right? And usually we say, well, what do you think about this? And the phrase is, well, let me collect my thoughts. Let me formulate an intelligent verbal response. That's how we set an intention. Whatever it is that we're going to do, we should clearly create in our mind a thought that can be clearly verbalized. That's how we set intention. Now, before we go diving into this list, watch how we can use this all over the place. Shakyamuni Buddha's teaching, actually listed in that list of sutras that we were talking about. Oh, this is from this sutra and that sutra. Yeah. In the Avatamsaka, the Shakyamuni Buddha says, now look, set an intention before you do anything. Here's how you do it. You walk into your kitchen, and you're going to walk right up to the sink. You're going to stand in front of the sink, and you're going to look down at it. And before you turn on water, before you touch the soap, before you pick up a sponge, you're just going to look. No stories. Don't think to yourself, oh, why'd they leave that in there? Don't do any of that. Just stand in front of the sink and set the intention, I shall clean these dishes. There it is. That sounds ridiculous, right? But you have set an intention for your action that you're now going to do. If you do that every time you walk up to the sink to do dishes, guess what happens? Over time, you will be doing dishes with very clear intent. That means you'll be meditating. Oops, I wasn't supposed to tell you that secret. That's how you meditate doing dishes. It's how you meditate doing any activity whatsoever. So if you pick up your mala, before you get it adjusted to say the first mantra, you pick it up and you say, my intention is to recite mantra. And pick a number. Don't just pick it up and say, I'm going to recite mantra until I'm tired. No. Say, I'm going to recite 108 mantra. I'm going to recite 21 or 27, depending on where your marker is. I'm going to do 54. I'm going to do 1,000. 100,000, 10,000. Whatever it is, you set the intention. Then you can go and get your mala ready and start chanting. And it means every time you do mantra practice, you will effectively be a Nagpa, a mantra speaker, a real one. Because your practice of mantra will be so deep because of the intention. That's how intention works. Right? Any questions on that? Yeah.
Is it possible to set a more complex intention, or should you just focus on what the actual activity you're doing is?
Be careful with being too complex. You really want to keep it very, very simple and direct. Otherwise, what happens to dishwashing? You'll walk up and say, I intend to remove all the grease from these pans, and then I'm going to scrape this, and then I'm going to rinse it, and then I'm going to sanitize this thing, and I'm going to put it in the dryer, and then I'm going to do this thing, and I'm going to do that. And now all of a sudden you're actually in storyland. And you're now limited. What happens if the pan, so you wash one of them, and the next pan has no grease in it? Your intention was to remove grease from pans. So you're going to set it aside now, because it's not part of your intention. See, if you get too complicated, then you'll be like, well, I don't know if I'm really accomplishing it, because now that I'm engaged in it, that wasn't really my intent. My intent was degreasing this part, but it has no grease. Now, this is kind of a weird thing using dishes, but you can see how it will cause problems in much more complex areas in life. So try to just collect a thought and say to yourself very clearly. Or it could be something as simple as, I'm going to wash the dishes till none remain in the sink. The same way I purify my karma until no karmas exist. Ooh, there's a really good one. My intention is to do these dishes as if I'm washing away my own karma. That's great intention. I mean, now you've, you know, went up a notch. I wasn't really going to go there with it. But that is what you end up doing, is your intentions become very spiritualized in the mundane. But right now, we can just intend to, I'm going to get in the shower, and I'm going to wash my body and be clean. Later, we can say, I'm going to get in the shower, and I'm going to wash my body as if I'm washing the Guru, or I'm washing the Buddha, or I'm washing the Idam. Wow, now all of a sudden, washing is a whole big giant puja. Now we have to take extra care of washing because we're washing something that's not mundane. So let yourself have room in setting an intention. It should just be this thing to achieve this goal without too much detail. Did that answer the...
Yeah.
Is that where you were going?
I was more of the second part of what you said, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
It did answer.
Yeah, that's a little more advanced, but sure. You can definitely add that spiritual element on top of it, if that's what you're wanting to do. In the beginning, I would just get used to the idea of setting an intention, meaning coming up with a clear verbal, I'm going to set out to do this, and then do that. You stand in front of this stove and you say, my intention is to make pasta noodles. And then you make the pasta noodles. And don't let yourself be distracted by other things. Because your intention is to make a pasta noodle, not to put something in a pot and then run off and do the phone and your hair and play on the computer and run around the house and all that craziness. It's to stand there and to make the noodle. Any question on that one?
No, it's very clear.
Okay. All right, so here's what we have. Right thought means the resolution. Resolution is not really a great word here. I'm not a fan of this translation or using this word resolution. Right thought means having the attitude or setting the intention to not cherish. Why would we say to set the intention? Well, because we're intending to, but until we're masters, we're probably not going to be able to accomplish it. We might the first couple times because we're going to be so nervous about screwing it all up that in our own nervousness we screw it all up because we've lost the intention because we're all in our head about the nervousness of screwing it up. That's not right. But at the same time, it may be too complex or overpowering of a habit. So maybe we do dishes a couple times, and then all of a sudden our laziness of doing dishes comes back. I'm not really going to fill the sink or do it the way that the guru showed me to do it, and I'm going to just kind of... And then all of a sudden what happens? The housemaster comes around and goes, why is there food still on the plate when it's in the dish dryer? And then you get in trouble. Because the laziness will, you know... You have to maintain your intent through the whole period of the practice. So when we say right thought means to have the intention not to cherish, we should do that first thing in the morning. Look, you can't do this whole list in a day. You can't take on this whole list and say, okay, I'm going to do all 8 today. That's ridiculous. I wouldn't even go as far as to say, I'm going to practice right thought today. That's absurd. what you really should do is you get up in the morning, you brush your teeth, that's first, you know, relieve yourself, brush your teeth, then you can start your spiritual stuff. And you say, okay, I'm setting the intention that today, to the best of my ability, I am not going to cherish my opinions and beliefs. Then, anybody know the cab motto?
Do your best.
Do your best. If you are doing your best, there is no such thing as failure. Failure only happens when you don't do. See, I didn't use the word try, because trying is failure. There's no such thing as trying. Let me give you a very clear example, because, you know, Buddha and Yoda both say the same thing. There is no try. And students love to use that when they perceive failure. Well, I'm trying. How does that even... Look, I'm going to show you something as a demonstration. I'm going to do my very best to stand up out of my seat. You guys can remain seated. But watch. This is my best effort of getting out of my seat. Everyone see that? Doing my best effort accomplished what?
Getting up.
I got up. Was it perfect and graceful? Maybe, maybe not. None of that's the point. Is that the proper ergonomic way to get out of the... Who cares? That was my best effort. And it accomplished my goal. I was standing. Here's trying. Well, I'm trying to get up. What did I accomplish? Writhing around? Completely ergonomically wrong. And it didn't even do anything. Don't try. Do your best. And whatever that outcome is your best. Hence, it qualified you. So what does that mean? My best effort today of not cherishing my opinion lasted 15 minutes. And for the rest of the day, it was all about me and my opinion. You accomplished the practice because you did your best. Oh, well, this puts a new light on everything, doesn't it? What is this telling us? What does this say about the concept of failure? Anyone?
There's no such thing.
That's right. So I'm going to present to you something that is really very radical. It's Dharma, and this is why they attempted to assassinate Buddha 3 times in his life. I don't know if you guys knew that, but not unlike Christ, they definitely tried to murder him too. Because he was destroying their system. Actively destroying it. He set out to destroy the Indian culture and tradition of his day. He even said so. I'm here to take down all of this stuff because it's horrible and leads to suffering. That's my intro into this revealing teaching that I'm going to give you that's very, very radical. You have a cultural brainwashing. You have been taught something that is unnatural, artificial, and not, listen very carefully, it is not for your benefit. This is what you've been taught. It was taught to you immediately in the very, very beginning. Generally, your parents, because they've been taught this horrific, dysfunctional system of pass and fail, and then they pass it on to you, and then worse, they send you into a 12-year brainwashing program to reinforce this garbage of pass and fail. And it's supported by the General Republic, taxes, government, sometimes private institutions that we pay to have them reinforce this cultural brainwashing of pass and fail on us. Granted, some of that, some, works out there in the mundane world, I guess. I can't say from direct immediate experience because I did the opposite. And I'm not recommending that people do that. I'm just saying my experience is different. But even if it works well for you and you have no problem with it, it fails you the minute you turn to spirituality. Because the pass-fail system that you've been brainwashed into will not, cannot, and does not work in spirituality. It is one of the number one dominant things that keep you from liberation. You know that word, karma? And we say, oh no, it's our habitual tendencies that keep me from my enlightenment because I keep behaving the same way. Yes. The pass-fail mentality is your habitual nature that you drag in and you chain yourself, imprison yourself from and away from liberation. So we see things like this. Oh, right thought means to, you know, have the resolution, have this intention to not do this thing. And because I've been taught by specific empirical systems out there, if I fail, I'm terrible, miserable, worthless, and should be sent to hell. Therefore, since I cannot reject my opinions and views for any length of time longer than 25 minutes, I'm a horrible, terrible person and deserve punishment. Thus, the root of guilt arises because of your brainwashing. Dharma never says that. In fact, Shakyamuni Buddha goes to extreme lengths to try to undo this. Because if you didn't know, the Vedics, you know, everybody, oh, Vedics of India, they were, is there children around? Trying to watch my language here. But they were the bottom end. They were absolutely terrible. Puritanical and empirical. They were like Darth Vader and the Empire. They were absolutely horrible. And the Buddha was like, this garbage has got to go. Because they would teach, oh, well, you know, yeah, you have these negative emotions, and if you can't overpower them or control them every moment of your entire life, then you are worthless. And that's why we have a caste system of these fantastic, untouchable people called Brahmins who will carry all of this worthless scum of the lower classes. Because the rest of you below Brahmins are completely worthless. And have zero value. Now the two classes above Brahmins, oh, well, they're so great that, you know, they don't even have to be taught because they're just great. Why are they great? Because of their copious amounts of money and their caste. See, they have a special kind of visa or passport that as soon as they fall out of the womb, they hand them this thing completely devoid of any actual virtue and just say, well, because you fell out of that specific vagina, you're awesome. And untouchable. That was ingrained in the entire Indian continent of culture. And Shakyamuni Buddha was absolutely ferociously opposed. That's why they kept trying to kill him, because he would walk in and literally say, the Brahmin class are all a bunch of heretics and charlatans and are lower than washers. Because people that wash clothes were the worst of the worst. They were at the same level as prostitutes. And in India, that they're like really terrible. They don't idolize them. And the Buddha says, the Brahmin and the upper two classes above them, that's where I'm putting them. And he would do exactly opposite of everything they taught. Everything they taught. So when we come to Buddha and we say, we want liberation and we take refuge in you, guess what he's going to tell you to do? You get to roundly reject your programming exactly the same way he did in order to see the very nature of your hang-up, because you hold the key. See, we don't live in Nazi Germany or in Soviet Union, where if we say something terrible, they come and haul us away. There's no Gestapo or KGB standing at your door waiting for you to do something negative. Instead, this culture has implanted a specter guard in your mind. So when you do something that doesn't fit their program, you get guilt, which is way worse. So they don't have to spend money policing you. Now, unfortunately, not just the regular general public society has been telling you, you know, well, if you're a B and above, you're the Brahmins and the hierarchy that are untouchable. If you get a C, well, you're just general population. And D's and F's, those are lowly, worthless people taking up space. Huh? That's what we're taught. That's exactly what you're taught. Listen, I have no degrees. I didn't even finish high school. Yes, I've been to college. I've even been to San Diego State University. I have personal students that have PhDs. I'm teaching them. Why? Because their systems failed them. And I have to to teach them how to undo it. Great Venerable Rick, who's coming to visit you. It's one of the greatest teachings I've ever heard. Whenever you are in a public school system or any kind of school system that has a grading value, work very hard for C's. Don't get anything higher and anything lower. Why? Because C represents the means. It means you have the normal capacity. That's exactly all you need. It means you've retained the right amount of information. Unless you're trying to be a career student, what do you need it for? In the spiritual world, this is very, very important. Super, super important. The Buddha said, 1 minute, 60 seconds is the same exact thing, karmically, as 10,000 years. And 10,000 years, collectively, karmically, is equal to 60 seconds. What does he mean? If I set an intention that I am not going to cherish my opinions, and I can last 60 seconds because that's my very best, it would be the same as a person who their very best is to not hold it for 10,000 years. We get the exact same brownie points. Our report card will both say 4.0. Even though you could only last 60 seconds and he lasts 10,000 years, you both get a 4.0. Why? Because you accomplished your best. There's no grading system other than that. If you never take any teaching from me ever again, or you want to throw out every teaching I've ever given you, this is the only one that you should keep. Keep this. Do anything you want from now on. Anything. But understand, your best is the only thing the spiritual path has ever asked of you. We don't want you to be somebody else. We can't measure you against someone else, and no one is measuring you. And there's no specter that we stick into you to create guilt. In fact, if you decide to not do your best, the Buddha says, that's great. Just say, I don't want to do my best. Then you set the intention to not do your best. So now, we're tricking you into doing your best to not do your best. And you can't fail at it. One last demonstration. I know I'm way over, but this is so incredibly important. Watch this. My intention is I'm not going to get up.
Wow.
You're the best.
Okay, time to stand up and do prostrations. No. My intent is I'm not going to do it. Did I fail? And for those few seconds is the same as somebody who practiced that 10,000 years. Your karma will be the same. That's why we never want to hear the word try. Don't ever utter that word again. Never. We tell you, do this practice for an entire week. And at the end of the week, you come back. Did you do it every single day? Well, no. I did it like on Monday and I did it Friday because I realized, oh my God, I didn't do it all week and now I got a report on it. And then they asked the question, was that your best? Yeah. I mean, my intent was to do my very best and that's what I ended up with. And they would say, that is absolutely brilliant. You're the greatest practitioner I've ever seen. That sounds funny, right? But it's the absolute truth. Swear on the gates of hell. That's completely true. That's the reality. All right, well, let's sit for 10 minutes, and then we'll close. But, and you see, the only thing we got was the word resolution. We didn't even get, like, into the rest of the sentence. But this stuff is very, very serious. It, I swear, if you do this, if you just watch this, think about it. Really seriously think about it. Oh, my God, yeah, I've been, like, judging myself on this pass-fail thing. And just understand intention being equivalent to your best and whatever the outcome, if that was honestly your best, and don't say I could have done better when you couldn't. Don't lie to yourself. Be completely honest. Well, yeah, that's all I had the energy to do. That was it. Why didn't you finish cleaning up your room? Well, I just burned out halfway through. That's all I had in me. Well, then there's no fault in that. In fact, you accomplished. Did you accomplish cleaning the room? Maybe not, but you accomplished doing your best. That's the most important, the resolution. Seriously, think on that. It, for some of you, you're going to be liberated. That's it. That you're going to go home, you're going to think about it, and then go, and then your whole life is going to change. If you guys were looking for this secret key, there is no such thing as one. It's just understanding that. What culture has done to you. The lie that it's fed you, and your honest, serious belief and clinging in it. The minute you pull the curtain back and go, well, it's just some dude trying to get home like me. There's no giant wizard. The show's over. Next week, some of you guys are going to be like, yeah, I'm liberated. I attained moksha. Now I'm just here because I want the enlightenment. I want the icing on the cake, but I already received the whole bundt cake, and it's lemon. Because that's the best one. Now I want that, that frosting that goes on a bundt cake. That's what I'm here for now. Give me the frosting.